Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Seckerman, tackling your questions on the line this evening. Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective as well. So don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us this evening. And let's start off with a bit of a broad overview today. And given the kind of market green we've seen, Rowan, it seems like the sound of that can being kicked a little bit further down the road is sounding good to investors right about now.
Yeah, so it does look like the market's a lot more positive in terms of the potential risks that were out there. I mean, the U.S. debt ceiling looks like that's going to be resolved, which was a near-term or short-term concern. More positive about Asia Tech as well. We saw some of those shares move up, but the NASDAQ had been down. That's also moving up quite strongly. So quite a broad-based rally. The miners as well, very strong. Somewhat symptomatic of the late stages of a bull market where you get these hyperactive moves. So moving kind of manic depressive. One day quite depressed, some shares sitting off quite strongly. And then you see buyers come roaring back in. We think that the prevailing attitude still is to buy the dip for now, even though risks are escalating, and that's why you're seeing these very strong melt-ups. So, and I think there's still money sitting on the sidelines looking to be deployed. So we're probably going to see more days like this in the future.
Yeah, I see, Graham. It's the buy the dippers that have been lifting equities into positive territory today, and quite a phenomenal performance coming through from our resource counters in particular. With that, let's put some of the spotlight on resource potential. A viewer writing in saying, I hold BTI for dividends, but are Sibanye-Stillwater and BHP good dividend plays, and will the divvies stay at around 12%?
The short answer to whether the divvies on the commodities are going to stay here is I don't know. I think we must recognize, Alicia, that it's been a bit of a purple patch for some of the commodity stocks. And you know, when you talk about commodities, I think BHP probably because of low cost bases and incremental expansions at some of their operations and a well established portfolio, I think it's probably more visible and more defensive. I'd argue something like Sibanye-Stillwater, though, they hit a rich vein, so to speak, but I think you must be very, very careful in assuming that's going to last forever. I remember in the early days when the Satrix dividend fund was created, and it was padded with platinum miners, and it wasn't a few years later, and then all those platinum stock dividends just completely evaporated. So if you look at somebody like Impala, maybe 2006 to 2008, fantastic dividends, then went through a very dry patch, had recaps, lots of shares issued, massive dilution. So I think you've just got to see commodity stocks for what they are, and when in doubt, just go and look at what the share prices are doing, because in many ways the real operational performances are tracking what is happening in those shares. So I think, I wouldn't assume that precious metal companies' dividends are going to maintain. I think in the case of BHP Billiton, I'm a little bit more confident that portfolio can sustain, because I think also you've got kind of declining capex and projects and good cost optimization. And of course, British American Tobacco, the short-term visibility is good, but the long-term question around the future of traditional tobacco remains. So I'd say you're sort of throwing three very different businesses into the pot.
Yeah.
I would argue probably, at least on the short term, probably BTI is the most visible. But I think on the medium term, probably BHP is maybe even more visible. But understand that single commodity companies are volatile. And I wouldn't be buying Sibanye or other precious metal, any single commodity stock for the year.
And that's exactly it, right, Rowan? When you're looking at BHP versus a Sibanye Stillwater, you're looking at that diversified play versus a single commodity exposure. So what's your approach and how are the two stacking up against each other in your books?
Yeah, so exactly. If you are going to be buying more of a single commodity play, Sibanye have got some gold as well. Obviously, the platinum group metals, and they're moving into some battery metals as well. But typically, that PGM basket is what you're going to be exposed to. So you have to have quite a strong view on how that basket's going to perform, because that's really going to determine dividends going forward. And what we have seen is actually dividend forecasts being cut for Sibanye as obviously the platinum and the metals have come down in price. So it just depends what type of investor you are. If you are seeking risk and obviously consummate returns, you would take a single commodity exposure against having a view on that commodity. We also prefer the diversifieds because you're not making a call on a single commodity, and you can see, for example, semiconductor shortage having an impact on platinum, so adjacency risk there as well. So we like Anglos quite a lot, diversified base metals, some platinum metals. They've also got diamonds in there still. And so it smooths out earnings, and we'd expect the dividends to be a bit more predictable.
Rowan, let's talk taking risk, but with the jury still out on the kind of returns to be reaped. Green shoots slowly starting to appear in the property sector, and Calgro appears to have weathered the worst of the impact on its sector, uncovered as it may be from the, or undercovered as it may be from a coverage perspective. Does the panel feel its recovery is down to its diversity of revenue or its inherent operating model, and what of its prospects going forward?
Yeah, so they came out with an updated trading statement. Their numbers did look much better than they did through the pandemic. These businesses, especially where they're selling stock, housing stock that they're developing, can be quite cyclical. So that where there's a downturn or a slowdown in sales in one period, you could see a pickup in the next period. So it doesn't mean the earnings are necessarily sustainable. It does look like they did cut costs and become more efficient, but earnings are quite lumpy for these kind of businesses, and it depends on the housing cycle. So I would be maybe a bit less confident. It's just quite a cyclical play. You'd have to look at the cash flows converting their housing stock and developments into cash. So there might be less risky prospects elsewhere, but again, there may be a reasonable payoff. But I think some of the other property plays might be safer bets right here.
Okay, let's take it a little bit broader then, Graham, and look at something like an SA corporate real estate. Do you see any merits of an investment in this company?
Yes, Alicia, I'll stick to the script that I've sort of followed for some time now, and that is that, you know, a lot of people feel that property is, you know, you can kick the brick, you can see it, and because of that, the value is quite predictable. We question that logic, and I think the more exposed you are to traditional retail, where there are massive shifts happening, and traditional sort of commercial in the form of office parks, and maybe traditional industrial, I think you're more exposed to some of those shifts. You know, we can't ignore e-commerce drives, for example. So I think, you know, it looks as though the listed property market in South Africa is starting to stabilize. You know, maybe some of the panic around loans to value and them having to do massive rights issues and fears around the gearing level. I think all of that is easing back, but it doesn't change the fundamental story that large property portfolios with big retail, office space, etc., I think are going to really battle over the next few years to move the needle very much. I think you've got to be more focused. And I know SA Corp, for example, has got some sort of more inner city stuff, so that's maybe a little different. But I would be more inclined to look at things that are geared to this new world economy. So if you look at a company like Equities, for example, who've got Amazon and DHL, you know, as customers, that just feels to me the right place to be. I think personally that landlords are going to battle to keep, I'm talking retail and high touch office, sort of premium grade, A grade. I think they're going to battle to hang on to tenants, and they're really going to battle to keep them at the same sort of rentals. So I'm a little bit more circumspect on the traditional guys. I would rather look at the kind of the specialist guys, like the equities, for example.
Yeah. Okay, Rowan, let's take a look at a company that has done a lot of cleaning up of late, Ascendus Health. Is it worth holding on to or selling at the moment? There have been quite a few question marks on what happens now that Ascendus has let go of its European arm and is sitting with South African assets. What does that do as far as the scale of the business is concerned to pursue any aggressive growth agenda?
Yeah, they've certainly been through a process where they've had to essentially repair the balance sheet. They embarked on a process of debt-fueled growth. And so where you get that wrong, where you basically overpay for an asset and borrow to pay for it, that obviously can set you back quite severely and put quite a significant hole in the balance sheet. I think the management's done a fairly credible job of stabilizing the business. And you have to shrink it essentially to cut the debt. So you sell the good assets, and hopefully what you're left with is still credible and has a reasonable investment case. So I think you do have a fairly strong management team there, and there's been an issue with some of the debt holders holding still the shareholders to ransom in terms of potentially converting either their debt to equity or taking some of the businesses as collateral. I understand that's been resolved. So I think you've got some optionality there. We have seen where other companies, for example, like Avenge, was severely geared. They managed to repair their balance sheet. You can see the equity value grow fairly quickly. So if you've been in it and you've sort of borne the pain, I would probably hold and hope for better from here.
Okay. Graham, you can add to that, but it's interesting that Rowan brings up Avenge because a mail just popped in. Avenge has been going sideways forever. So surely with the recent infrastructure intentions, there's upside to consider there. So you can add to Ascendus if you've got anything to add, but let's move on as well to Avenge.
Alicia, one thing I'd like to urge viewers to look at, you know, we were talking about Calgro, we were talking about Ascendus. You know, it's worthwhile looking at what these companies have done over a 10-year period, for example. And although things are looking better, you know, it's off a very, very low base. I think it's something we mustn't forget. And in the case of Ascendus, I think there is a plan to delist it because I think generally they feel there's no real reward to being listed. They're not going to get afforded any sort of rating, and the costs are prohibitive. So I would agree with Rowan. I would hold them simply because there's a fairly good chance that, you know, if you get delisted, you might get a little bit of a premium there. And then I think in terms of something like Avenge, we used to joke in the office when it went from, you know, 4 cents to 5 cents and say, well, you know, if you compound 25% a day, the returns are quite attractive. But it just really just moves between the doubles, not going anywhere. Again, I think if you're looking to play what might be a fairly volatile sector like construction, considering, you know, all the corpses that are lying in the streets from that let's call it decade of underperformance, I think I would urge people to rather look for good quality businesses. You know, go and look for, you know, something like Wilson Bailey, who I think generally weathered the storm. When there were trouble, they moved quite quickly and decisively. It's probably a little bit more expensive, but it gives you that upside exposure to the infrastructure story, but it doesn't come with all the volatility. I would rather go for one of the blue chip construction stocks rather than trying to buy the penny stocks for the 30% rally because the price goes up 2 cents.
That being said, Rowan, and I know the focus is always on quality companies here and, some of the bigger counters as opposed to the smaller plays, but let's take a look at MC Mining. Considering the coal prices and supply constraints, is a junior player like MC Mining worth a punt?
Yeah, so what you're seeing is some of these sectors that you thought were kind of in sunset, I mean, and thermal coal in particular, I mean, you've seen it skyrocket, and that's kind of interesting because it's actually as a result of the greening of some economies and power production that they are seeing a shortage in gas, natural gas, and that's created a squeeze, and so companies, power producers have to find alternatives, and coal has been soaring, and it just reminds you that mining and mines, you can really print money from time to time when, if the commodity price goes up as it has, and so if the prices can hold, which I think in the short term they possibly can, they're a lot higher than I think the business plan or the projections were ever anticipated, that they will generate significant cash and you will get some good dividends. We've seen it with some of the other commodities. Maybe they've come off like iron ore, but coal is sort of flavor of the moment, and it does look like a reasonable punt.
Okay. Graham, let's end off... I don't know. I was going to say end off on a high note, but as I say it, I hear the cheese in that comment. But let's take a look at psilocybin. It's looking to accelerate listing plans. Is the market ready now for cannabis stocks? Should I prepare to get in? And I ask because NUT was such a fail.
Shall I say it's not a sector we cover and truthfully haven't even thought very much about. I mean, obviously in the US there was a lot of excitement, but I think there the markets are fundamentally different to here. So yeah, I can't comment. I think, you know, something that Rowan was saying, I think is right. A lot of small caps, they tend to, you know, they often underperform, but those businesses can pull levers and do things that maybe bigger companies can't. So it comes down to the fundamentals. So, you know, We're not sort of sector buyers. We don't say, well, we like the cannabis industry or we like the coal mining industry. Obviously, there are enabling environments, but the reality is you just got to look at the underlying business. And that's just my way of saying I don't know.
Okay. On your side, anything to add there, Rowan?
Yeah, look, obviously there's been significant investor appetite for cannabis stocks in other markets, as Graham was pointing out. So there might be some latent sort of untapped investor interest for a local player. I think the regulations are improving in South Africa, which is a big part of the sort of accessibility, but you would have to look at the quality of the operators, their business plan, and how they're looking to address the market, I think, before you can and make a decision. It would need close scrutiny.
Okay, let's take a look very quickly at two stocks that you guys have done your homework on. Rowan, on your side, your stock pick this evening?
Yeah, so we're going with ACI. It's a bellwether South African industrial stock, but it is an adjacent way to play the mining boom. They're obviously not directly selling commodities, but they're selling explosives and chemicals mainly into the mining sector. The explosives business makes up about two-thirds of profitability, and we're seeing a pickup in demand, even though some commodity prices have moderated. There's still significant production. It's trading on a single PE on a dividend yield of around 6%. So it looks very attractive here, and we're seeing investors looking for value, and this one certainly offers that.
Okay, quick last word to you, Graham.
I think what Rowan is saying about value is right, and maybe in the last day or two, you know, the big cap global stocks, sort of the risk on stories have kicked into gear, but we still see a lot of value in SA. I'm going to go with African Rainbow Capital. My sense is that there are underlying businesses in there and assets that are very interesting and generally unloved by the market, because I think everybody just sort of sees these investment holding companies trading at 50% discounts into perpetuity. I question that. I think in a different world, especially if the underlying portfolio is well managed and delivers, I can see those discounts narrowing. So I think, you know, I really feel that African Rainbow Capital, especially with things like Sanlam Asset Management in there, they've done the Absa deal, for example, there's a lot of optionality, and the downside, I think, is quite limited given the 50% or thereabouts discount in NAV.
Okay, let's leave it there, gentlemen. Thanks so much for having joined us this Thursday evening. Of course, Rowan Williams from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspectives as well. We'll be back next week to take more of your stock-related questions. For now, have a great evening. We'll be right back.